Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call discussing Evolva's financial results of the first half of 2020. I'm Andre, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Barbara Ducci, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Hello and welcome everybody. Thank you for participating in our half-year results 2020 call. Before we start, I'll just read you the safe harbor statement. During this call, we'll make forward-looking statements about the event and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including projections of Evolva's operating activities, our strategic plans, and the anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results in 2020 and beyond. Such forward-looking statements are subject to known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors, which may be materially different from any future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by such statements. In today's call, Oliver Walker and André Penaud will elaborate on the progress achieved in the first half of the year and will then be available for a Q&A session. Before we begin, I'd like to note that the press release, the presentation, and the financial statements are already available on the Evolva website. And with that, I'll hand it over to Oliver.
Thank you, Barbara. Good morning, good afternoon, and a warm welcome also from my side. We are living in challenging times, but we are increasingly learning to live with it as COVID-19 has become part of our daily life. In this challenging environment around the globe, we have delivered resilient performance. But let us jump directly into the slide deck and have a first look at slides 5 and 6, the highlights of the first half year. We have completed the transformation to a product-based company. The registration of Nucaton with the EPA marks a major milestone in building our company. With this, we have now all commercial building blocks in place to grow our business to and beyond cash break-even. Customer demand for our products has significantly increased. This is highlighted the clearest by record order intakes of 6.2 million Swiss francs, strongly driven by health ingredients resveratrol. These we could not realize in full due to supply shortages caused by COVID-19 at some of our CMOs. Still, sales grew by 27% over prior year, despite the low demand for flavors and fragrances products caused by COVID-19 too. Since sales volumes have become sufficiently big in size, we have started to move our major products to commercial scale contract manufacturing organizations. This step is needed to support future growth and to realize competitive product cost. These CMOs are predominantly European-based to create the necessary proximity to our technology functions based in Switzerland. We will see a first positive effect of these changes in the second half of the year, for which we target positive gross margins. The supply delays at CMOs and the lower demand in F&F have impacted our reported EBITDA. Underlying product-based EBITDA, however, has improved. André will go into more details on that subject. With the soon completion of the BARDA project, R&D revenues have started to fade out as planned, and our financial performance has become vastly product-based. Consequently, we are starting to increasingly reference to product-based financial performance too. Slide 6 shows the performance we have realized with view to the main KPIs we track. As you can see, we have by now developed an innovation pipeline that is delivering new products on a regular basis. After the highlights, we now have a look at our strategic priorities. For this, we move first to slide 8. As you can see from this slide, our strategic priorities have moved towards delivering a constant flow of innovation, refined approaches in our commercial activities, and putting together a set of commercial scale CMOs to support, as I have already mentioned, the next phase of development of our company, which is to realize profitable growth. On slide 9, the completion of the transformation to a commercial company with a revenue-based model becomes very clear. Now to slide 10. With a constant flow of innovation, our product portfolio is becoming increasingly diversified and sales volumes are considerably growing. Consequently, and as already mentioned earlier, we are onboarding commercial-scale CMOs that can support growth and enable profitable sales in future years. The next slide is a familiar one that we have shown already at former result conference calls. Two update comments to it. First, we have meanwhile started to open the bigger market segments shown on the right-hand lower corner, and we could add vanillin to the graph too. Second, we have become a driving force in the resveratrol market segment, thus lifting market growth rate above 10% annually. Let me wrap up these last slides with slide 12. We have successfully completed the transformation from an R&D stage organization with a services-based revenue model to what you can see now, Evolva being a commercial company with an innovative technology at its core and a product-based revenue model. We go now on to the next chapter, the business update, which starts with slide 14. As shown on an earlier slide, we are increasingly diversifying our product portfolio, however, focusing on these three business segments and being able to market products with clear perceived differentiation and a competitive cost position too. Moving on to slide 15. While we see early signs of recovery of the demand for our F&F products, new innovative products will further drive growth of this commercial business too. For the new compound, which we coded EVE-X157, we have started commercial terms discussions with multiple customers. And we have made progress in optimizing vanillin for expanded commercialization in future years. Let's go to slide 16 on health ingredients. Our commercial strategy for health ingredients is built on leveraging health benefits of resveratrol by promoting results gained through clinical studies and by providing a portfolio of resveratrol variants that meets the needs of customers. Persistent execution of corresponding commercial activities led to a significant increase of customer demand and major consumer packaged goods companies and multi-level marketing companies to evaluate resveratrol too. Our recently launched soluble version of resveratrol, Verite Aqua, is adding to this trend as it has been designed to be used in functional beverages, a fast-growing market segment. In the first half of the year, health ingredients were the main driver to our record order intakes. Due to the delays at some of our CMOs, as already mentioned, we had to even stop accepting customer orders for around 2 months, as timing of shipment was unclear during the lockdown. This has clarified in the meantime, and we can again recognize a nice order intake. Story continues. And we continue on slide 17. The registration of Nucaton as a novel active for pest control applications is the pivotal step towards building a commercial health protection business. With the registration comes along a 10-year exclusivity in an estimated $350 million market. This is the US alone. Since the publication of the registration, the list of companies interested to develop and market consumer products containing Nucaton is growing on a daily basis. Based on the sales pipeline and the dedication shown by interested companies and considering the required time to register an end-user product with EPA, we are on track for first sales late 2021-2022. While starting to build our U.S. health protection business, we are evaluating expansion to countries basing their regulatory approval on U.S. regulatory approval. On the next slide, slide 18, you find some update comments on Eversuite. There are no material developments since the last communication, but given the positive feedback Avansya is receiving from customers on a repetitive basis, we anticipate royalty income to grow over time. With this, I hand over to Andre for the presentation of our financials. Andre, please.
Thank you, Oliver. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm pleased to welcome you to the financial section of our first half results presentation. Moving to slide 20, as already mentioned by Oliver, Evolver has transformed from an R&D stage organization into a product-based company. As a consequence, the development of product-related revenue will determine the success of Evolver in the future. Product-related revenue increased to 3.8 million Swiss francs from 3 million as a result of higher market demand, in particular driven by health ingredients. However, Evolver customers as well as suppliers have been negatively impacted due to COVID-19 and the lockdown measures in the majority of the markets. Especially our Valentine and Nucatron products within the fine fragrance market were impacted. Our CMOs were impacted by a shortage of raw materials and the delay of delivery of needed production equipment. As a result, they were not able to deliver on time the material required for orders of approximately 2.4 million Swiss francs. The decline of R&D revenue reflects mainly the completion of R&D contract with BARDA and is in line with our guidance given to the market. Our gross profit development is mainly the result of the fading out, and it also reflects an extraordinary impact driven by COVID-19 of 500,000 Swiss francs due to the shortfall in the freight F&F segment and increased costs with our CMOs. With the partial easing of lockdown measures, we are confident to compensate that shortfall during the second half of 2020. Our implemented systematic cost control and further efficiencies gained from the optimization of our organization resulted in a reduction of 400,000 cost within our operational expenses. Excluding the extraordinary increase in a provision related to the former R&D collaboration with DITRA, our OPEX had decreased by 9%. Evolver's cash position decreased to 25.3 million Swiss francs, of which 14 million results from operating free cash flow. With this, I move to slide 21. As already explained previously, our cash position decreased to 25.3 million Swiss francs, and this is mainly the result of higher cash outflow of the operating activities. Because of the positive demand and order momentum, Evolver needed to increase the net working capital to satisfy customer needs. As a consequence, our inventory of finished and semi-finished products increased by 1.7 million Swiss francs. Our sales inventory and operational planning helps us to better understand the demand of the products, and with the partial easing of lockdown measures, we are confident to neutralize that increase during the second half of 2020. Since our products have a reasonably long shelf time, we do not expect any negative quality impact. Furthermore, our trade and other receivable increased by 1.7 million Swiss francs, mainly because of increased product sales in the second quarter 2020 and increased tax receivables. As addressed by Oliver, Evolver entered in June 2020 into an agreement with Nice & Green to secure our financial needs and further grow operational worldwide. With this, I will move to slide 22. Here you can see a breakdown of the individual components that contribute to the movement of Evolver's EBITDA. Starting from our first half EBITDA 2019 of minus 5.5 million Swiss francs, the fading out of R&D negatively impacted our EBITDA by 3.3 million Swiss francs. As a result, we get the first half 2019 product-based EBITDA of minus 8.8 million Swiss francs. As a positive factor, driven by our implemented systematic cost control approach, together with further efficiency gains as a result of the optimization of the organization, we were able to improve the product-based EBITDA by 1.8 million, as explained by Oliver in the introduction. Evolver was affected negatively by the lockdown activities as a result of the pandemic, as well as needed to capture an extraordinary expense of 0.7 million for the increase of the provision related to DITRA. Both negatively impacted our first half product-based EBITDA by minus 1.5 million Swiss francs. The first deferred contribution from the new collaboration agreement with IFF supported positively our first half EBITDA. With this, I have finished the financial part of our first half 2020 result presentation and hand back to Oliver.
Thank you, André. Now, before we get into questions and answers, let me go through our updated outlook for 2020, which you find on slide 24. The outlook assumes no further lockdown measures being imposed due to COVID-19 and business environment being largely consistent over the rest of the year 2020. Despite this challenging global environment, we expect product-related revenue to double over prior year. As COVID-19 will still have some impact as well in the second half of the year, we expect EBITDA loss to be above prior year level. However, important to note, sales in the second half of the year will generate positive gross profit. Because of COVID-19 and the investments mainly into building our new CMO network, as already explained in the previous outlook, explained in March 2020, cash outflows will be above the 2019 level, so no change. With this, we conclude our presentation and we can start with the Q&A part of our call. For this, I hand back to Barbara or, respectively, the operator to start the Q&A.
The first question comes from the line of Sarah Welford from Edison. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I have two questions. First of all, in terms of Nootkatone and the US CPA approval and registration, can you perhaps give us a bit more detail in terms of interest outside the US, perhaps in Asia? You refer in the press release to other countries who might follow sort of US CPA registration protocols. And secondly, in terms of the CMOs, you say that in the first half there were some delays in terms of actually fulfilling the contract. How confident are you that they can compensate for the H1 delays in H2? You've explained that you've increased your network, etc. Do you think that you can basically make up all the back orders for H1 in H2? Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Very good questions. So, number one, I take actually the second as number one, CMO-related question. Yes, we absolutely think of not only making up for the 2.4, so to deliver the backlog, but actually to continue growing the resveratrol business segment, because the inflow of orders is really significant and it continues. And what I hinted to, you know, with the CPG companies and the MLM companies, the really big one, once we don't have actually the culmination point in front of us, long not. That will still go a lot we'll see a lot of growth before we see sort of culmination. So in this respect, the very positive momentum continues. Now, going back to the CMOs, as we are following this capital light strategy to date, indeed, we are depending on CMOs. We have we try sometimes even to have multiple CMOs in place, which is costly, unfortunately. But what I can tell you is we have done the necessary tech transfer. We give them the necessary support. We have seen starting productions and first commercial batches we have received from the new CMOs as well. We have agreements in place. Again, what I said is COVID, we expect to be consistent. No one has the interest of another lockdown. They have started to live and learn to operate, you know, with some limitations, COVID-19 related. And they have the capacities and they have actually the necessary equipment to realize the cost efficiencies that we have visibility, clear visibility on. And this is, as you could see, one of the charts with the diversified portfolio applicable actually to all of our products. So we know that we can actually generate nice gross profit margins with the whole product portfolio. And it was really the need to switch over to the CMO. So, having said what I have said, there is actually no reason why for the CMOs not to perform. It's also generating, money through actually producing for us and us actually generating business with our customers. So in this respect, I'm actually not confident only because of being confident, but there is reason to be confident.
Okay, thank you. And with regard to Nucatone?
Oh, sorry, exactly. Nucatone, interest outside US. Well, the thing is actually that I think globally there are a lot of companies. It's different level, however, per country. I mean, in US, there are sort of CMOs, there are industrial companies, there are, big CPGs, small CPGs, really some garage companies. Everyone is excited and interested, including consumers. And we are pretty much flooded with a lot of calls we have prepared to digest actually all that flood, absolutely positive to the positive or to create a positive momentum towards us also going forward. But in fact, outside the US, it is mainly in the professional community so far, not yet on a consumer level, but that doesn't matter too much. And as I said, we are looking into countries that are basing their regulatory approval on the US regulatory approval that we have already received, which should be then sort of a fast track registration, really fast, which is more of a notification almost. And there are some Asian countries where that is clearly applying. In EU, which is certainly very interesting, and as we follow the EU regulations in Switzerland too, I would like actually to get that also to our Swiss folks product, and this will take us a little bit longer. We try these days to connect with the EU to get onto sort of also emergency program, but that probably will still take its time, and therefore to bridge somehow, the gap to EU, we are looking into these other countries where actually the registration will be sort of easier. So the interest is sort of global. I think, if you look into like pet segment as an example, just to highlight one of the segments we are actually getting into, you have, like in US, you have fipronil, an active that is being sort of sold, used with Frontline, one of the products that probably many of you know, having a dog. And fipronil has been banned for human applications or application with human beings. And a lot of people actually expect it being banned actually as well for animals. So then the industry will be left over with nothing. And I think, there are some market segments really which need a successor to existing chemicals. And this is a globally applicable situation, not only valid for the U.S., but it will take time, as I said, actually outside the U.S. also to get the registrations done. And that's the reason why we want a bridge for the countries I have mentioned.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
The next question comes from the line of Sebastian Bray from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Good morning and thank you for taking my questions. Could I start with one on gross margins? Whereabout at the moment are underlying product gross margins relative to the target of about 40% that I think Evolva has mentioned in the past? And what I'm trying to reconcile is, I believe in the past the company has stated that gross margins for resveratrol and Nucatone are positive. If that is the case, is the only reason there was no gross profit in H1 the fact that because of corona costs and CDMOs? That's my first question.
Yeah. Thank you, Sebastian. Good question to get into to clarify the situation further. So the situation is as follows. With F&F, so which is Valentin Nucatone, predominantly we are already generating actually these target margins. We are even above slightly. So in this respect, we are already there. The big, missing one so far was actually resveratrol, which was requiring really to move resveratrol as a compound to a new CMO because these initial ones, and that's the thing. If you have smaller production volumes, you cannot yet go to the commercial scale. CMOs, they are not interested really. Now we have sort of like qualified, one can even say. And these bigger CMOs, actually these commercial scale CMOs, they can really go for bigger volumes, but also much lower cost. As I also mentioned, and I think this is now like 15, 18 months ago, we started to have visibility that with the processes, with the strain that we have, the resveratrol production strain, actually we will achieve absolutely the target margins that you have mentioned. The thing was only to get to the right volumes in order to actually really get the interest and then also drive the necessary economies of scale with new CMOs, which is also needed, by the way, as we are hitting bigger and bigger customers. Because these bigger customers are looking for bigger volumes being supplied, and therefore that is another reason why actually we had to go to commercial scale CMOs. So while having had visibility for resveratrol as well to the target margin from a technical point of view, we yet had to do this step actually moving there. And that's the reason for all our actually efforts, you know, that we have mentioned so often. The investments that lead to this cash outflow, which is predominantly really driven by investments into the new CMO network, plus the build-up of inventory where we can. For some product categories, we are just simply sold out because of the reasons mentioned. So, you know, we are preparing for actually the new phase, which should actually start already in the second half of positive gross profit margins. They will still expand, that's also clear, not with the first batches you reach already target profit margins, but that will actually ramp up so that we are both next year in the position to have actually a much nicer profit margin on a gross profit level, and that we have really the necessary, how to say, capacity on a CMO level to support growth. Because as I said, I mean, first half we even had sometimes, okay, that was lockdown specific, but we had to even stop taking orders, which is the most painful thing, because we are facing this very big, actually, customer demand.
Can I ask about the expected sales split? Am I right in saying that a large majority of this year's sales are expected to be resveratrol rather than Nutricone?
Yeah, that's somehow as a large. It's how to say a dominating part. True, it's not the vast majority. That's not true because we still have a nice half and half basis, and there it's really that the industry is having more faith again and starts to order again, and the fine fragrances probably will still take a little bit of time until they are getting back on track. This is also clear. But F&F is still relevant, and with the launch of what we coded EVE-X157, which we will launch with first commercial sales around year-end, we will launch a significant compound. I mean, this is the, what is it, yellow bubble, actually, on the bubble chart, right? Attractive markets, which is a 250 million market segment. And we have a very competitive cost position, and we have a clearly functioning compound. So in this respect, actually, F&F will also grow a lot in size over the next years, and then rebalancing again the, how to say, business split. But you're right, for the second half actually of the year, and therefore for the full year 2020, it is certainly quite dominated, or the larger part is health ingredients.
And last one from me, capital need. If there is an underlying operating cash flow burn of 10 to 15 million for each half year at Evolver, could we just go through the potential items other than the operating ones that Evolver will need to come to EBITDA break even? And I'm thinking in particular, there's the 5 million payout to the US Defense Agency, I think Defense Threat Reduction Agency. There is there any potential incremental investment in facilities that Evolva will need to make either on its own or in combination with CDMOs that could add to this figure, let's say 10, 15 million for own fermentation capacity or partly owned, or are there any other sources of capital outflow we should be thinking of?
By the way, again, thanks for that question, because, you know, we cannot extend sometimes our initial speeches for too long, but this is a really very good question needed in order to clarify. So we will not have 2x50 million cash outflow this year. That's by far too much. So what you can do is actually you can still go back to the guidance in March and add a few millions, really a few only, as you can see in the EBITDA bridge, etc., that Andre has explained, because that's the COVID effect. And in terms of cash outflows for CMOs, so far we do not see actually a large need of really investments. That's not the case. So it will be less. And afterwards, I would say once we are having that behind us, you know, we get into a more regular mode again of investments, so that should normalize. And if we have one of these bigger CPG companies, you know, sort of giving us orders, then many times it happens actually that they are even financing, you know, separate production lines if required, because then we talk really about much bigger volumes, which we hopefully get into over the next few years pretty quickly. And therefore, there should be sort of still a normalization. You said own manufacturing capacity. So far, actually, we have built our business model on a capital light strategy. I think what is important is to keep capital discipline. So we will not get into excessive, you know, investments and so on, like, you know, let's say in the past, my predecessors sometimes wanted to get into. So if we ever would get into own manufacturing, then it actually has to be very quickly accretive to our financials for various reasons, and it has to clearly pay itself, because otherwise, investment after the investment after the investment, that cannot be the case. So you can actually rely on the earlier guidance that we have given now for 2020, the normalization for the subsequent years, and if ever there would be sort of getting larger into manufacturing, you can rely on us that we actually would only go into it if we see a clear positive business case actually for investors, for all stakeholders, including the capital market.
All right. Thank you for taking my questions.
Very much welcome, Sebastian.
The next question comes from the line of Michael Driesdorf from The Market. Please go ahead.
Yeah, yes. Hello, everybody. Three questions. The first is, I didn't understand, you already, for Nordkarton, you already closed contracts with consumer product producer for Nordkarton, or you are just in conversations? The second question is, from the 350 million market potential you mentioned before, what do you expect will be your piece of the cake of this 350 million, respectively for your partners? And the third question is for Eversweet. Are the production costs now are on a level where the product is comparative to other sweeteners like corn sugars, or how you make their progress? So there were my three questions.
Thank you very much, Michael. Very good questions, too. Happy to answer, actually, these ones. So Nukaton for health protection, you certainly talk about in the first question. We actually do not get into agreements, really, longer-term supply agreements with customers, because, you know, we have something very unique on our end. Nukaton being registered, we have this 10-year exclusivity, and we want to make sure that actually everyone is running like hell for getting some market share. The second is, we have this trend towards more natural, and we have some of the bigger market participants which are somehow locked into this chemical stuff with DEET and so on. And they want to actually move over to also more natural, but we want to see them first demonstrating that they really, you know, do this move, really are bold in terms of positioning a more natural product in the marketplace. So as such, actually, it would be a dangerous thing to give away, you know, sort of flexibility, also margin potential, by entering into agreements. Some people then go even for exclusivity and so on, which I have no intention, we have no intention actually to do so. And everyone is like running. And the pet segment, because of the reasons that I have said, I mean, there, they are really, everyone wants to be in the pole position. Everyone wants to be sort of first. And that's sort of the situation I think everyone likes that has a turnkey market instrument at hand, which we have with Nucaton. Then the $350 million US dollar market is on a compound level. So our partners, I mean, they are always partners, certainly, even if we have no longer term agreements. Customers are our partners, and they are already on the next level in terms of value chain. So for them, it's actually in the billion. What is the market potential for them to get? So the 350 is actually our level, so the compound level, and it's too early to say how much we actually will be. One indication, perhaps maybe, but which is a maybe only. I mean, the more natural ingredients, they are today, I think, trending towards 10% market share. Fact is that, you know, if you look at lemon eucalyptus, whether you look at some other of these naturals, it's hard to see that they really are effective. I mean, they are natural, yes, but efficacy they don't have, not at all to the same extent we have. So we have efficacy that is comparable to DEET and other chemicals. And because of that, I think we are also of a better sort of, let's say, alternative to the chemicals. But where then exactly the market will, go to, that's the big question. So, you know, our market share in the overall 350 depends on the consumers in the end, on CPG companies, that we have the right ones also, not only big ones, but also small ones. Mm-hmm. We proudly partner with small customers, especially because they are much more innovative. They are actually really also positioning products completely different. They are interested parties from cosmetics, actually, industry that see business opportunities from other areas. So therefore, it's too early to be said, but I think it is not a 1% or so. It should be more. That's also underpinned by the fact that CDC, you know, the Center for Disease Control in the U.S., government agency, even EPA is now issuing positive communication about us, our compound. So I think, you know, there is huge support, and they wouldn't do that for a fraction of a market share. They do that because they believe that we should become sort of a more relevant, I call it, a sort of market participant. But what that exactly means, that's too early to be said. Eversweet, cost competitive position, you mentioned, also very good question. I think already the initial strain that we had provided was in manufacturing. That's a different level. You know, there's a technical level, and then in manufacturing you can actually create quite some efficiencies, which Cargill also has done, even in the initial phases. So at that time, it was already cost competitive, and with the improvements that were contributed from DSM's end on our strain, actually, initial strain, it is now not a question of cost, but it's really a question of these, customers of Cargill, eventually doing these product launches. It's a long journey, a little bit comparable to what we are sometimes seeing on our end as well. It takes quite some time to actually ramp up a CMO. They were the CMO on their own, right? Cargill manufactures in Blair, Nebraska, but that was also not going without any delay. They had some delays, and they took DSM some time. Not a lot, actually. They were really fast, but still, it takes a little bit of time. And they had to resample customers, not because of the taste part, but because of the manufacturing part. So because the granularity, perhaps, you know, of the powder was slightly different. And if you have mass manufacturers like or CPG companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, etc., you know, everything has to work out and manufacturing really very nicely. So they wanted to retest the new powder coming out of the new improved strain in order to make sure that they do not suffer any breakdowns, you know, in manufacturing process, etc. So this is a long journey. And then in the end, on top comes that, you know, a Coca-Cola, and you can see that from all their ads and so on, they are also looking into trying to figure out what we consumers think, which is the mega trend, you know, is clear, but how to migrate, you know, from today's product mix to a new product mix, that's the big question. And that's, by the way, a big analogy to Nucaton. It's the same. So as a big company relying on chemicals, you know, this whole shift to something more natural is a huge challenge, because it is marketing claims, it's beliefs that they have created with consumers and so on that you have to change. And it's not easy, actually, to do that. And that's the reason sometimes you need new market participants. In the case of beverages, I mean, there are companies like Danone, etc. They want to play also a role on the beverage front, which was not the case some years ago. And because of all these, supporting facts, I think we can be absolutely positive that we will see sometimes royalties really nicely growing, but it has taken time.
Just the third one. Can you claim Nascoton and Eversweet as natural, or is this forbidden at the moment because it's a biotech product?
Yeah, the natural is not defined by FDA or another agency, so no one can actually use the natural unless it is coming from plants, and from plants then the extraction mode even has to be super, super clean. Because otherwise it's still not natural. So even plant extraction is many times not natural. So in this respect, you know, that's also why EPA talks about the first biopesticide, which is actually the key thing also for consumers, that it's a biopesticide and not, you know, a chemical compound that has been artificially designed by some great chemists, but it is sort of a more artificial design. So our compound is based on nature, and for this reason, actually, we have everything in place that is needed, you know, to make the difference.
Okay, and is this a problem for the consumers that you can't claim it as natural? Do you see that as a problem, or is it?
No, the consumers, the U.S. consumers, they are completely used to this, that natural is really very limited existing. Industry has found, I don't know, 1,001 at least variants of, you know, how to convey the message of natural without using the word natural. That's like biopesticide. I think this is also clear. And therefore, no, consumers, they are completely used to that. That's not at all of a concern.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome. Thank you. Great questions.
The next question comes from the line of Jonathan Herbert from Colony Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just want to ask you a few questions. Firstly, on gross margin, on the second half, just to continue the discussion from one of the previous questions, on the second half, what is your expectation for gross margin? Will we be already, you know, in the 40% plus range? And can you give us a feeling for 2021? Then second question on resveratrol, you know, what kind of run rate will we see this year, you know, in the second half and next year? You know, are we moving from niche healthcare to, you know, more mainstream products, vitamins or, you know, food products such as yogurts, et cetera? And then just wanted to discuss the run rate for next year in terms of revenue growth. You know, for the second half, I think we're close to, year on year of 200%. And admittedly, it's because of the backlog. You know, what kind of growth rates could we see in 2021, you know, on the back of all these product launches? Can you give us a sense for turnover in 21 or growth rates in 21? Thank you.
Very much welcome. I will happily go into it, Jonathan. So let's take the last first. The growth rates, 21, we do not comment yet because that we will do with the full year numbers, giving a guidance for 21. But I give you an indication coming from the other end. We now clearly see, from a commercial demand, so customer demand perspective across, our portfolio, plus what I mentioned on product cost, actually, we have visibility to target profit margins, and we know what it takes on the OPEX front in order to actually, grow to what I sometimes mentioned being the break-even sales, around 35 million. It's just the numbers, right? And this we hold up absolutely, and that's the reason why we made this statement, cash break-even by 2023. That's absolutely clear, feasible. It takes some things to be executed, absolutely, but that's like always. But we have visibility actually to this to achieve that target. If you take the 35 and actually calculate backwards, then you end up with growth rates, which are absolutely okay. I would say there is perhaps some upside potential if, and that's the big if, and which we cannot influence too much, if one or two of the CPG companies really come in, with resveratrol, they may alter this whole development. As in the case of Eversweet, big CPG being Coca-Cola, it takes them a while until actually they come out with products. And the CPGs now for resveratrol that are showing clear, substantiated interest, They are of the same nature. The good thing is, by the way, a little war story, but that's an important one. Two of these bigger multinationals, they actually, because of the, quality, the high quality of the last studies, the clinical studies that we have communicated, they abstain from establishing an own study and will reference to our study, which is actually a third-party study supported, heavily by industry insiders, by research, scientific community, etc. So that should help to shorten a little bit the lead time to launch a product launch. But still, these bigger multinationals, sometimes they do iteration rounds, not on the compound, but because of the marketing claim doesn't fit yet 100%. And that can drag for half a year, for a year, just a marketing claim, not on the compound again, on just the general product. So and therefore, this is speculation when such kind of bigger multinationals come in. We still have quite some substantive customers in size that in between we can serve and that will keep up very nice growth rates as well. On this new compound, as I already said, EVE-X157, and again, sorry for the coding, but it's due to competitive reasons. We have discussions which go now into commercial discussions, which shows you that actually the interest is not only remotely there, but actually tangible. And yeah, we have already qualified. It's all fine in terms of sampling of the material. So we can be also positive from that end. There are a lot of elements in our product portfolio that are really positive. So therefore, to achieve this break-even revenue is absolutely feasible. I don't know. If COVID is all of a sudden spreading, we have huge lockdowns for 12 months, what the heck ever, yeah, then the world may look different. So that's the caveat always. That's always a caveat, but we all are in the same boat of estimating that situation. But if it's halfway okay, like it is now, actually this midterm target, 2023, is absolutely feasible. long answer to this number three question, but it's probably an important one. Gross margin question, to go back to your first question, second half, it will not yet be, as I indicated, the target gross profit margin that we are achieving, for the simple reason, you know, it takes some batches until CMOs actually are achieving, you know, sort of let's say, very good levels of productivity. We are not, it's not chemistry, and even there it takes sometimes some time. There is a little alchemy element in it, and which you have to actually control, which goes back to experience, learning curve. But for next year, actually, we should absolutely approach that level on a CMO, depending actually again on the CMOs executing. But step by step, we actually will approach that one, not only for F&F, but also for health ingredients, so for resveratrol. Then the resveratrol run rate, your second question, and whether we are moving from niche to mainstream, I think I have already answered with the comments on bigger CPGs, multi-level marketing companies. I mean, there is a potential that resveratrol is becoming bigger. How big, actually, that's also, it's a little bit like, you know, Nucaton, Nucoshield in health protection. There is a big potential, but still we have to make it. We have to see these bigger CPGs coming in. I don't want to call that out now, crying victory at all, because we still have to see it. But the only thing that we can say is by now, resveratrol, having been launched quite some time actually to the market, and there is also a lot of research, 13,000 papers on it, etc. But what was missing somehow is a little bit more solid clinical studies, which we are providing now, plus more application-oriented studies that help actually the customers, you know, to create new products, because many times it's creating new products because it's new health benefits that they are addressing. And what also is, and that's a little bit of luck, but eventually that's also fine, you know, resveratrol is perfectly, really spot on to take benefit of this trend towards healthy aging, longevity, etc. So this is, you know, we are coming from the age of sort of the period of, you know, you have to be strong when working and have energy and so on. And actually there is a big trend as the population is aging and as people are realizing that there is quite some, how to say, also profit pool that can be leveraged. This trend towards healthy aging actually has emerged significantly, and resveratrol is just a compound that very nicely fits the health benefits of resveratrol, nicely fit actually this trend to, how to say, to take benefit from.
And on resveratrol, of sales to reach EBITDA break-even, mm-hmm. does not include larger contract with FMCG, right, or multi-level marketing companies.
No, absolutely
kind of
no.
On the, right.
No.
And can you tell us where, you know, where you're at in your discussions with these FMCG companies or multi-level marketing companies? Meaning, have they, you know, are they in product development, or is it just initial contacts or curiosity? You know, how deep is the process are they?
Yeah, that's a very good question, which I have to be a little bit generic on, because they don't want to, how to say, being sort of recognized certainly in a discussion like this one here. It's due to competitive reasons for them. So the thing is actually there are, and that's as far as I can go, there are two types of these CPGs. One is that sometimes the headquarter is working on some ideas, you know, around resveratrol. And then there are also subsidiaries, large subsidiaries of such a CPG. And in one case, it's even the headquarter, also the business segment headquarter plus the local large subsidiary that is working with resveratrol. The larger subsidiaries, they are much faster because they have a specific idea, as an example, a functional beverage. So they know exactly what they want to go for. Functional beverage, I mean, in the end, it's certainly still complexity, right? I mean, you can argue Coca-Cola is also just a bottle and some liquid in it, but that has huge complexities. and the same applies to functional beverages. But it is somehow then still easier because these local subsidiaries, which are in big markets, they are knowing exactly what they actually want to go for. And therefore it's, let's say, more specific discussions that probably are also, how to say, and that will definitely lead earlier to some commercial upside. But again, I am more than careful in going into any timelines because it would be just, you know, coming out with fantasy numbers or with just, I don't know, whatever, because of these CPGs sometimes really iterating all of a sudden on a little detail, and all of a sudden another 6 months, 12 months, et cetera, are going by. So therefore, you know, that's as much as I can give you. I think it is already great that they have evaluated resveratrol. Some of them, they have put the check box actually already there with resveratrol. That's all fine. So it's not about us anymore. It's about the product to work on. Some others are having more specific ideas, which is even easier. But still, it may take some time. So it's unclear what the timeline is. Once we know more, we will let you know. But before, it is more this general trend information that we can sort of communicate only.
All right, thank you.
Welcome.
We have a follow-up question from Sebastian Bray from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hello, last one from me. The resveratrol, can I ask where it's being used predominantly at the moment? Is it going into functional food or is it being sold as pills into the consumer health segment? I'm just interested in hearing what, in category terms, is currently driving the product growth.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So it is actually in various application areas. We do not even exactly know. You know, I cannot give you sort of an exact split because sometimes our customers certainly do not disclose their sales split. And they are customers that have actually some, power bars. At the same time, they have also some pills. Then they have some stick packs formats that they are having put resveratrol into. I think if from this end, used in various applications, including pouches, which are very, sort of up in Asia. Pouches are really popular there. And let's say the latest sort of trend that is now upcoming is really functional beverages. There, the industry had to sort of realize first that resveratrol actually is really nicely qualifying for it, which is time that it takes. It's absolutely clear. But that's the latest, type of application that we see being taken up. The exact split, as I told you, I cannot give you because multiple customers have multiple of these product types and how they use it, where exactly, what the volumes are. Again, this is even something they will never disclose.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. Sorry, we have a last-minute registration from Rupen Boyajian from Finanz und Wirtschaft. Please go ahead.
Yep.
Hello. Thanks for taking my questions. One on this provision, DTRR related. Can you tell exactly what it is for? And second, for EverSweet, you mentioned that it depends now on the customers of Cargill to actually launch these products. Does it imply that right now there are no major product launches and that the income, your license income, is very small or was very small in H1? Thanks.
Welcome. So the EverSweet actually... it is constantly growing, the royalty income, but it's yet rather small. But it's growing and it's becoming sort of visible at least, you know, when we have a stream of payments, etc., because it is soon not smaller than customers, you know, sort of orders or whatever. So in this respect, actually, it is growing. There are product launches absolutely taking place. It's not that there are no product launches. I would say there is a massive amount even of product launches, as they have sampled pretty much the world with EverSuite, as they have access to really customers around the globe. So there will be these whole product actually rollouts, etc. But they have just taken time because of the reasons I have explained. To make a long story short and not to steal the show from André on DITRA. DITRA, there were actually some projects, in earlier years, more than 10 years ago, that started and finished actually in the early 10s, 12 or 13, the last project. So it's before our time. It was more pharma-related, some projects actually for the DITRA. And there was, some over-invoicing taking place, actually, of the folks in the old days. So it's sort of, you can also look at it like there was a loan for quite some time at no cost that we enjoyed as Evolva, and now it's to repay, actually, this amount of money as there has been over-invoicing. The over-invoicing was not intentional. It is just, as you can learn from anyone, having such kind of agreements, you have to be very, very careful when applying the rules, the FAR rules, as they are being called, because there are so many actually loopholes, etc., and mistakes that you can make that actually there is probably no company in the world that is ever not having to repay at least some amount. And I think it was in the 30 million somewhere. The total invoices for all these projects, so were actually quite substantial projects. Evolva was running at that time, and so it's an old echo from the past actually that we have with DITRA. I think the only thing important to note now is that with the 700,000, we actually think now that's the end. And eventually there will be a cash payment, which we don't know when that actually will be. The longer it still takes, the better. Certainly, don't write that. But that's actually it. And then this old stuff actually will have been sort of put to bed and into the archive as well.
Thank you. And can you just give an indication of the EverSuite income right now? I mean, is it around 100,000, for example?
No, it's bigger than that.
Okay. Yeah.
And it will grow. No worries.
Okay, yeah, sure. Thanks.
Welcome.
The next question comes from the line of Laura Pfeiffer from Octavian. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning. I just have a question related to the new product you intend to launch by the end of this year. So, I mean, do you still require to have approval to launch it? Maybe that's the first question related to it. And then secondly, on the financial impact, what are here your expectations? I mean, will it be a rather quick sales curve to expect? And also, you mentioned the 35 million sales level for the break even. So is this new product somehow baked into this expectation? Thanks.
Welcome. So yes, it is baked into these expectations to some extent or at a certain volume. We do not need any regulatory approvals to sell. That's not needed. And now in terms of the take-up, et cetera, I think, the indications that I can give you is, number one, it's a 250 million market segment. This is the natural part only. There is a much larger a synthetic part, which we may get into as well, because we really have a very good cost position. But we start with the 250 million market first, and then it is not a market where there are thousands of customers, so it's a more concentrated, marketplace. So, you know, as I indicated, several customers we talk, actually, we have discussions, not with, you know, very tiny ones, but actually with relevant customers. So in this respect, we can be rather positive that it should be sort of a nice ramp up that we will gonna see. Still, we have to make it, and it's always two to tango, but we have the necessary ingredients to succeed. We have the right compounds in terms of its function. We are perfectly positioned in between, like resveratrol, in between of not wished natural and synthetic. So it's the same positioning technically wise, so which is actually very positive. And third, we have a cost competitive position, which means that it's all the ingredients we need actually to succeed, and we can leverage, you know, our F&F network that we have already built with Valentin and Nucaton. So in this respect, it's positive, but now it's to make it.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
There are no more questions.
Good, then thanks a lot. And I actually hand over to Barbara to close the call. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I just want to point out that the full year results 2020 will be announced on February 25th, 2021. And the annual general meeting of Evolva will take place on April 8th, 2021. Thank you very much for your ongoing interest in Evolva. We look forward to delivering a strong second half of the year, and we wish you a safe time ahead. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a good time. Bye-bye.